Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's Football Fans Podcast. This is the pod that gives real football fans a real yada, 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 yada. You know how it goes by now. So this podcast is going to be the final pod of the season, and it's going to be a pod of a slight difference this week. So because it's the final podcast of the 2015-16 season, no guests this week, it's just me. But don't worry, you don't have to worry about hearing an hour and a half, 2 hours, whatever it is, of me badger on about how great Koscielny is and how rubbish United are, and me tell you about how my predictions were great and I never get anything wrong and I know all about football. No, we're going to have a little bit of fun on the pod this week, and we're going to look back at some of the passionate exchanges, outlandish predictions, some of my amazing and sometimes not amazing questions. Sometimes some of the guys really thought-provoking, deep, and sometimes stupid answers from many of the guests I've had on the FFP this season. We're going to have a little bit of fun with it. I'm going to look back at some of those predictions, some of those statements, some of those opinions that my guests have given throughout the season. And as you guys have heard, they have been quite brutal at times, but they've always been honest. And I thought it would be a bit fun to look back on some of those. So we're going to go through many of those on this podcast. I hope you've enjoyed listening to the FFP this season. We are, before I go any further, going to be doing some podcasts throughout the European Championships. But for the Premier League, the domestic and European club season, we're gonna come to an end on this one here. But let's have some fun with some of the things that we've heard from some of the mad people on the podcast, including the likes of Gabriel and Ollie as well. So here's some of the most outlandish and crazy things and funniest things that we've heard from some of the guys. Starting with our old Liverpool fan Marcus, who made an outstanding prediction, which got laughed at on pod number 2.
And just finally, I mean, if you're going to come fourth this year, who's coming out of the top four? Who's the most vulnerable in that top four list?
I'm going to be controversial here, but I think if Chelsea suffer an injury to Costa,
you think they'll drop that far out?
I think they'll drop that. I think they could possibly drop that far out, just because I don't see that. Obviously, summer transfer, they replace him. But I'm looking at Falcao and Remy, and I'm just like, they're going to end up doing what we did with Sterling. You're going to be trying to put Hazard up front and trying to cross balls into him and stuff, and it's just not going to work. And teams are going to work that out, and it could all go wrong for them. You know, they still got guys in their team like Terry, and he could just get old overnight.
You know, last week you asked us for our relegation candidates.
You want to change your mind now?
I've got to change to Sunderland. It's Sunderland all day long. It's Sunderland. No. Based on one game. No, it's just based on that defence. That defence is so bad. Coates and Kabul. Did you see the fourth goal? The fourth goal was so bad. It was, I'm telling you, it was like, that was like Keystone's Cops. I was cracking up watching it. Kabul had about 3 chances to clear it, and he was just like, I have another go. Go on, I'll give it to you again. One more time. I couldn't believe it. They were so bad.
And George, what did I say? I said, look, if you want to stay up, you don't sign a Spurs reject, right? That's exactly what I said, right? And that's exactly what happened. Because for me, right, you know, the thing that annoyed me last season was that Vardy got in the England squad, right? Because I know he scored against United, but he scored 5 goals, right? People get carried away. When Vardy's banging in goals against you, right? You gotta really take a long, hard look at yourself. And the thing is, I just think to myself, it's about confidence, right? Those Sunderland players got up the next day, they looked in the mirror and they said, we are bottom and we got packed out by Leicester. Simple as that, right? And I don't care who you are as a manager, it's going to be hard to pick that up. Villa away Friday. Random, isn't it? Friday night. And I worry because we got Blind, and that guy that Villa signed from Blackburn is lethal in the air. Blind at the back. I'm worried. Don't get me wrong. I'm worried, but if we win again, the PJs come back out. I'll be drinking my tea with the pinky finger, and I'll be watching City versus Chelsea like without a care in the world. I mean, the one thing I've got to say to Marcus though, right? Because I'm going to listen to this at some stage in the week, right? You're aware that you said Chelsea are finishing outside of the top 4 in exchange for Liverpool. When you said when you said you're being a bit controversial, you were being outrageously controversial, right? Jose don't do that, right? Jose might not win the league, but he's not coming fifth. And with Liverpool benefiting that, right? That is not going to happen. I will go on record now. We will listen to this back in May. That is not happening. Not in the end. You know what? I was, when Jordan asked you the question, I was sitting thinking, you know what? If you say Man United, fair play. Because
to be fair, that's why I asked the question. That's why I asked you the question.
And then when you dropped Chelsea, I was like, wow, this guy is just coming from nowhere. And I'm going to be very interested in other comments he's got to say.
So, listen, back in May we now are, and it turns out that Marcus, who made that very bold and very outrageous, as our United regular supporter Marvin stated, turned out to be actually quite correct. And if we just trace our minds back to the start of the season back in August, the idea that Chelsea under Mourinho would not finish in the top four, let alone where they did actually end up finishing 12th, 13th, wherever it was actually quite a crazy thing to say. But it wasn't crazy at all, it turns out, because our Liverpool supporter Marcus got it bang on. So big up to Marcus. That's what the pod's all about. Big statements that you can back up. He did say, to be fair though, that they would fall out of the top four in exchange for Liverpool, which is in some respects equally laughable. But yeah, big statement. You got it right there. So shouts to Marcus. Also, Marvin mentioned the Friday night games, which we never heard or saw another one of after the game between Villa and United. BT must have just thought that two awful football teams in Villa and United playing out an awful game of football. Nah, no more of that nonsense. But it's a shame, because I personally thought that Friday night games was a really, really good idea. But hey, maybe next season we'll see some more Friday night games. And Ollie, our Tottenham supporter, mentioning how bad Sunderland were on the first day of the season, and they were one of my three to go down. But again, got that one wrong. Sunderland obviously stayed up, and turns out that it was their defence in the end, ironically enough, that ended up keeping them up, alongside obviously a few goals from Jermaine Defoe. So a big part of this season's FFP is a section we do called Pundit Watch, where we look at and we analyse the football figures that do the analysis of all the games. And as per usual on the Football Fans podcast, all of the guests were extremely brutal, but also very, very honest. So I've clipped up and picked out some of the best bits from this season's Pundit Watch.
Are we calling it a performance for a pundit now? Well, that is part of the problem, probably, isn't it? That people see Ian Wright as doing a performance as opposed to being a pundit. He's me personally, I wonder why you'd go back and work for a company that you slagged off publicly in the media about the way they treated you. I think that's very bizarre. Because
money talks.
Well, I don't imagine so, because they've actually got more pundits now and their budget's being cut, so that is earning much more money. But, I mean, as an Arsenal fan, I love Wrighty, but I'll be honest, I'm not hugely enthralled by him, because I don't think he... I like pundits that educate me or that say something that makes me think, or pundits that I disagree with. I just mirror when he says something, you know? And I think... maybe because I work in football, it's different. But as a fan, I can't see why you'd get excited about Wrighty being on Match of the Day.
Allardyce was on Match of the Day
and Sky.
On Sky the very next day. And you just think, how does that happen?
Wasn't he on BT as well?
Was he? I don't know. I didn't see that. If he was, I didn't see it. I saw him on Sky. Yeah, you know, I saw him 2 days ago. But I just saw, it was really funny as well that he was on Match of the Day on the day that West Ham get beaten by Bournemouth.
You can't make that up, can you?
You can't make that up. I mean, seriously, you know what it's like as a fan, right? You know, as a fan, when your team loses, you think, I ain't watching Match of the Day. Yeah. And when you find that Sam Allardyce, your ex-manager, who most West Ham fans couldn't stand, is on Match of the Day, you just know you can't watch it.
I found it hilarious. I even tweeted that, you know, West Ham fans wanted Big Sam out in exchange for exciting football. Well, you got exciting football, but you lost. You lost.
The funniest thing was when they asked him about the fullbacks. He said, well, they never played like that when I was there.
They were poor. He's actually right.
A few weeks ago, David Gold, He's just everywhere, driving me mad. Yeah, every time I turned on the radio, right? Every time I watching Sky Sports News, and he'd be there looking like the cat who got the cream, right? Oh, we got Slaven Bilic now, and Bilic, oh, everything's so fantastic, and he's going to bring a new dynamic to the club and whatever. They won, they beat Arsenal, right? And suddenly it was like everything was rosy. West Ham were onwards and upwards. They're a European club now. They're going to be in the top six. Everything's going to be fantastic. Everything's rosy. Right, I thought I heard him on the day of the Leicester game, and I heard him, and I thought, "You're going to get beat today. I know you're going to get beat." He's there giving it all the stuff before the game, chatting, and you just think, "You're going to get beat. When you hit the ground, you're going to hit the ground so hard." And that's what's happened. Last couple of games, they've been beaten beaten well.
Who lets in 4 goals to Bournemouth?
Shocking.
Yeah. At home. Yeah. Who does shocking. That?
But you know, credit to Bournemouth, not even being patronising, but they were brilliant.
They were excellent.
The funny thing about that, well, not the funny thing, the disappointing thing about Match of the Day was that that game was a top game, right? Yeah. You've got Sam Allardyce in the studio. By coincidence, you've got Sam Allardyce as one of your pundits, and you're letting Shearer do it.
I noticed that as well.
I think you've got to let him do it.
No, I think before they came on air, I reckon he would have said, look.
No, I know. He probably did.
Do you understand? Because really, if he says what he thinks.
Yeah, he probably did. I know he probably thought to himself, I can't do the West Ham game because that would be really bad.
Yeah.
But I would just turn and say, nah, you're doing it.
You're right. He's only got a few gigs. And I think he's very conscious of the backlash, like through social media and stuff like that. So he ain't rocking the Man United boat.
Not at all.
Whereas Gary Neville doesn't care. Like on Twitter, if you go at Gary Neville, he'll come right back at you. He'll say it as he sees it. Whereas I think Yorkie is much more comfortable toeing the party line and saying the
bare... You should
bare...
be a pundit then.
Well, everyone's got to eat, Ollie. Everyone's got to make some money. Do you know what I mean? So he just tries to be inoffensive.
But sorry to cut you, but the fact that he knows he's got 2 guaranteed bookings a year, that surely means that he can be a bit more offensive and a bit more...
Well, those
there.
2 bookings could disappear. And we don't have access to 3 p.m. games, right? So we're looking to you to tell us what's going on, right? Mm-hmm. So fair enough, you will say he can't pronounce a name. Why not? Why can you not pronounce a name? You know who's in that starting lineup, right? They ask the player, pretty much every Prem player that signs, they say, how would you like your name pronounced, right? Everybody in Sky seems to be able to get it right. Even the most simple names he cannot get.
Someone
right?
called Shakira the other day. Who was that on Sky?
All right, so you're talking about one thing, but I'm talking about like people like Mahrez who aren't new to the Prem, right? He cannot do it. As far as I'm concerned, if you're a pundit, you take 5 minutes, you find out the starting lineup, how do I pronounce that name?
They shouldn't make allowances
for
that.
Yeah, as simple as that. It's ridiculous.
And this is one of the problems with all of the broadcasters. You can't make allowances for just because you're an ex-footballer. If you can't broadcast, you shouldn't be on the TV.
He's always been that guy at the club who looked like he used to be a bad man when he was younger, but like he's just the guy now.
He's
the main dude.
He's just
around. And now he's doing it in the punditry as well. He was really
they're
good pundit back in the day.
They're doing
he wasn't.
The same thing with Jimmy Ballard, like giving him shows to present. Like, people go to school to get skills to do that stuff. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. Like, I feel like bringing it back to the whole Marvin with the whole kind of person that sells magazines on the street corner.
It's just any guy. He's exactly.
And he's not even funny. Like, when you're a kid and you're like 10 and everything's funny, yeah, it's funny. But it's not funny when I've got to pay subscription fees.
Watch Robbie Savage.
No.
Ian Wright needs to understand, when he's a pundit on Match of the Day or any other pro, it's not about him. It's not about him. He's supposed to impart information and knowledge, and he doesn't do any of that. Or in Match of the Day, he just sat there giggling a lot of the time or saying stuff when Lineker was doing his links. And you're just like, shut up, Wrighty. Yeah. Just shut up. You know, it's just like, it's not about you.
It's not the Wrighty show. You know? It's Match of the Day.
It's Match of the Day. People just want to watch the football and get a few comments from you. Don't want to hear you in the background grinning and laughing and that stupid suit. I mean, what was that? Ian Wright. He looked ridiculous in that suit.
But the thing is...
Henri he's the new Wrighty. He's
how many sides?
Oh, come on. No. Come on, Henri.
I just
Marvin's face is like, well,
he's got a major slur, right? I'm gonna criticize him as well, but now you've taken it so low, I feel compelled to fall back.
I just find this kind of, he was sitting in between Souness and Carragher. And all he was doing was this kind of, he was like a pigeon. He was just sitting there with his head going like this. Like, I was like, what are you doing? Like, looking from one person to the other. I was like, what are you doing? I just thought he was really annoying. And when I watch him on the 5:30 programme as well, on the 5:30 programme, it's like, Redknapp's got the right demeanour, right? Redknapp stands there with his hands down. Ronry's always got his hand up here. What is that thing he's got his hand? He's like, he's about to do something with his hand. Like, he's got his hand up
screen.
Here. Like, put your hand down, man.
Screen.
No, he's not on the touch screen. He's just standing there like this. He stands there like this. What is that?
For the listeners, like Ollie's doing a demonstration of how
he's like, he's got a rickety arm or something, and he's like, he's going to start handing out flyers or something. It's like, put your hand down, man. He just annoys me. The man annoys me, I gotta tell you. And not only that, right, but I know you want to talk about the hand on the knee thing, but to be honest with you,
let's have it up.
He annoys me, but Carragher as well. I can't believe Carragher, right? There we are. They're talking about Rodgers, and they're talking about Liverpool, yeah? And this is what Carragher said. I've even written it down, right? Carragher, Liverpool will be coming Tottenham. Think they're a big club, but the real big clubs are not too worried about them, who they buy and what they're going to do. What have Tottenham got to do with it? Why is he bringing Tottenham into it?
I agreed.
Liverpool in absolute turmoil, right?
Can I tell you why he brought Tottenham into it?
He's there going on about Tottenham. No, hold on. Let me just tell Jamie something. Look, Jamie, wake up, right? You haven't become Tottenham. You're below Tottenham. It's not even like, oh, you'll become... Last five seasons, they finished above Tottenham once. It's like, you know, I understand Liverpool are a bigger club than Tottenham. There's no two ways about it. Liverpool won five Champions Leagues or European Cups, and they've won 18 titles. I'm not saying Spurs are a bigger club than Liverpool, but Liverpool, the ship has sailed, you know? It's not like, oh, yeah, Liverpool, we're a great club. You haven't been a great club for years. It's not like, oh, well, you're becoming Tottenham. No, you're below Tottenham.
Sometimes you'll come out with a comment that people think, that's what I wanted to see, like, because everyone's speaking about tactics and that, and he's just like, he'll be the guy who says, look, if your players aren't going to play for you, if they don't like you, he'll just say something like that, and everyone's like, yeah, how come no one speaks about that? We'll talk about the tactics. Everyone's talking about the tactics and all this stuff, but you know, if the players just don't like, man, then they're not going to play, innit? Yeah. He's the guy who will see that comment, and there's a certain man that will resonate with. Yeah. So you know, you got to have the whole expanse. Yeah, you got to have the whole spectrum there.
Can I also ask, right? What must it be like? Yeah, you're sitting at home after a shocking performance, yeah, but shocking defeat at the weekend, yeah, and you're sitting home on Monday night, and you're just about to eat your dinner, and you're thinking, yeah, I'll watch a bit of Monday night football. And you see Jamie Carragher just dig you out like he dug out Van Aanholt. He's just like, watch him. He's not even running back. I mean, seriously, if you're a football player.
The highlight ring, man. Look at this guy.
You want to play just to avoid being dug out on match the day or Monday night football.
That be? And do the players, when you go to training the next day, do the players
know,
also...
They know, they're like...
Did you see what Carragher said about you?
But you know what, right? When you play badly... The worst thing I think you could do is watch TV. Do you know what I mean? You go out with your family, maybe you play...
Or look at your Twitter feed.
You go out with your family, maybe go to the cinema where no one can talk and no one can see you. It's dark. You don't watch it. Because the thing is, and Ollie's right, yeah? If it's Gary Neville, fair enough. But when it's Carragher, you are pissed. Do you know what I mean? You are pissed. And the thing is... It's Carragher, right? Never forget that.
But you couldn't even run.
I just can't think of anything worse. When you know there's an editing man in Sky who has taken the time
to keep up all your moments.
And you know what? For him, it wasn't even probably that difficult to find the moments. You know, that guy has made that reel about you.
In 5 minutes.
Because you were so bad. If you're top and you say, look how great he's playing, then you're loving life. But the flip side of that coin is there is somebody who has rewatched the game and picked out all the crap that you have done. Be ashamed. When Terry popped the shot, the room burst into laughter.
Yeah, it was funny.
And his point was, well, all those journos are laughing at me.
I was going to say, yeah.
But they haven't kicked the ball I have. But, I mean, for me, like, John Terry played a blinder because I actually think he was up there because there's rumours swirling that he's one of the people that aren't behind Jose. And when I left that press when I left viewing that press conference, for me, the only thing I talked about was he slaughtered Savage. Not did you believe what he said, or is it, are they really behind Jose? It was, he totally changed the narrative at Savage's expense, and no one cares about Savage, right? So it was like easy pickings.
But then, yeah. but then doesn't what you've just said about Savage, the fact that he's saying, "Oh, none of those journos have played football," doesn't that go back to what we were saying last week though about him? He's still going on that line. Oh yeah, but you know, none of them journos have played football and whatever. This is what irritates me about him. If you are one of these people, which he is, which he's always going on about, and he does that thing on 606 all the time.
You never play the game.
You never played the game, so you don't know, right? If you live by that, then you've got to accept that there are players that have played at a higher level than you. Yeah. And if those players have played at a higher level than you, they got every right to turn around and say, well, Robbie, you haven't played in a Champions League final. You've not won a league title. You don't know what it's like playing for a club where you're expected to win every game. You don't know what that pressure's like. You turn up and play for Leicester or Derby, right? And if you lose and you go home, no one cares. Yeah, apart from a few Derby fans and Leicester fans, no one else cares. You don't have the media chasing you around and saying, oh, crisis at Leicester, crisis at Derby. Nobody cares, right? So that is if you're prepared to turn around and say to the average punt who rings into your program, you ain't played the game, so you don't know. If John Terry then says the same thing to you, you got to take it, mate.
He did really try to appeal to the modern man. He was like, you're talking about the dentist, the plumber. They can't have an opinion. And I was thinking, shut up, Robbie. Yeah. Shut up. And the thing about it is, I've come to a conclusion that not just him, but I cut myself in this. I think I've forgotten how little he did in the game, because I think the most games he played probably
he won the Rumbelows Cup.
Yeah, his career resembles Rumbelows, I think.
There's a couple of men that's on telly right now that I don't want to say. I think they're very good, charismatic. But I don't think.
Nah,
that
you know what? The rules of the podcast. You can't say it on the first, bruv. You said it already, so you got to come out and say it.
Do you know what? I think if you have a blend, if you've got someone who's got charisma, but I think you have to have someone alongside him that knows the game.
Listen, bruv. I'm not going to let you get away with this.
He's not letting you get away.
I'm pulling you up.
All right, okay. Like Ian Wright. I love Ian Wright.
Thank you.
But I don't think Ian Wright is great at showing the tactical side of the game, or you know, he's like a road man, isn't it? So he'll just talk. He just gives me joke. I love Ian Wright, but he just gives me joke.
Anybody a fan of Garth Crooks as a pundit?
I love him.
As a pundit?
Yeah. I love him.
No.
So far only Ollie's got his hands up.
Love is a strong word. Are you sure it's love?
Yeah, that's
I do love him. A because I know him and I like him. B
because he doesn't know him. B as a pundit.
B because he's a Spurs legend. I think he's great quality.
Business case to discount everything he says about Garth Crook. The first two had nothing to do.
He's my mate.
He's my mate, and he's a Spurs legend for his first two reasons. Basically, right. If I don't kiss his ass, he ain't gonna be my mate anymore.
Three football clubs that have received, I think it's fair to say, a rough ride on the FFP this season are Aston Villa, Newcastle and Sunderland. Here are some of the best clips that some of our football fans who are featured on the FFP have had to say about those three football teams.
What has given them this belief? Just because, fair enough, they get 50,000 every week. They're a one city club though, so you should be pulling in that much, you know? But I really don't understand where this comes from, that they're so massive and that they should be in the trophy mix and they should be in Europe and this, that and the other. They ran, what's his name, out of town, Alan Pardew. For me, he's a decent manager. You know, people say, oh, the Alan Pardew slump. What manager doesn't have slumps?
His slumps are pretty...
No, every manager...
No, his slumps are... Wenger, even Van Gaal, they don't go on seven, eight game runs.
Don't mention the Dutch person. Don't mention him. But Wenger's at a club that's of a higher calibre. Alan Pardew's never been there, so his slump isn't... And I would argue that Wenger's slumps have been as bad.
Eight games in a row, defeats.
But I would say, for the level that they're at, their slumps have been poor. 10 years without a trophy. That is some slump in any case.
Okay, but in terms of...
in terms of form on games, a short-term yeah. basis...
I don't know any manager that can go on
yes,
9, 10
games. Yes, but managers don't get enough time at a club anymore to come out of those slumps. If you found that they did, every manager would have a slump like that. 3, 4, 5 games, 6 games without a win or losing. They'd come back, have a good run. That's what it was like 15, 20 years ago
okay.
when managers got more time.
All right.
So that they ran him out of town and almost it looked like they're going to get relegated. So I want them to go, but somehow I think they might rescue it.
We could talk about Randy Lerner, Agbong Lahore on holiday, having a shisha pipe. We could talk about all of that. But there's 11 men crossing the line every week. And they've only won 3 games. 3 games. Don't take the Michael, man.
Do those who they be?
Don't take that. Don't pick up your dough every week. Don't, I take Fabio's point. I think that the rot, they say the fish head rots from the head, right?
Yeah.
Is the rot has is trickled down all the way to the players. They've taken it on. And Remy Gard couldn't stem the tide. He couldn't shut the dressing room door. No, but then who was going to work for Lerner after my man walked out? He was talking the talk from the beginning of the season, letting he's another Harry Redknapp, isn't he? So he was letting certain quarters of the media know, it's not right. You man are right. You man told me it's right. He said, no, the man's not spending no money. He's not doing nothing. He don't turn up. I phone him. He don't phone me back.
Sounds like me.
I'm only in charge of his club.
You caveated it with Ashley's had a good go. Ask those nice people what they think about Ashley and tell me if you've still got the same connection. Do you know what I mean? So for me, Newcastle, I mean, some of the stuff, I mean, I'm thinking of back in the day, G, when they had like Dennis Wise running their transfers.
Joking,
they thought they were on a winning thing when they, you know, when they tapped into this unknown country called France and got any player they could get their hands on. Plus the fact you're saying they've never, you ask a Geordie fan, you know, should they be winning the league? They're not saying it now, G, but when they ran United close with Keegan, they were saying it. And the whole reason, even when Pardew had that worldy year, they wanted more from Pardew, right?
They still weren't happy with
it. So I don't think they know their station as much as you think they are. And I think a lot of them have the same mentality as you do. We're big. We fill our stadium.
Their first choice. They're never their first choice. They get these players in like Kabul. I'm desperate for a club.
Just get me a
club. You know, Jermaine Defoe. Do you think Jermaine Defoe really wants to be at Sunderland? Basically, he came back from MLS and he needed a club. Yeah. And he went up there. Yeah, but most of these players now, they go to Sunderland. O'Shea and Wes Brown outed at Man United, end up at Sunderland.
That Villa need is they do need that, you know, that Man City shake to turn up. Where
you think?
Yeah, they need something. And the thing is,
money's the answer to turning that club around.
Work for Man City, they was like a similar type of club, you know. The fans would turn up every week, and if they won, it was a surprise. Do you know what I mean? And they had their little magical moments every now and then. They had this one player that was like, oh, he's the dude, and then he'd leave.
Newcastle for me is a great club, like.
Very briefly, why? I want to get on to Marvin and whose choice is up. But very briefly, why? I don't the 50,000 thing.
Small club syndrome
doesn't wash with me. They're a well supported
club. Chelsea can't get 50,000. I understand
what it is.
I do get why Gabriel would say it.
So Gabriel, you tell us why you think they're a big club.
Because I've been there a few times, and when you go there, you do get that feel. Like you go
they're
around
Leeds.
I'm
sorry, if I went to Leeds. They've got that big club feel as well. They're in division.
Have you been to Leeds?
I haven't, but the fact is that people tell me when they go to Leeds, it's a real football club. There's history there. The fans, the whole
and
city,
Leeds,
the whole
Leeds
city
do
loves
have
it.
A history.
No.
They were once good.
No, I don't get me wrong. I'm not discounting Leeds, but when I say when you go to St James's Park, you do get the feeling that you're at one of the biggest grounds. It's just
because the fans around you kind of perpetuate that feeling. They tell themselves they're a big club, so when you go there, you feel it.
No, not necessarily. It's memories from things like Sky Sports and the 4-3 against Liverpool, things like that. Like
clutch in there, Gabriel. Come on, a couple of exciting games.
They got 0
a big
points
club
for that game.
Great you game. Know, they're also they're famous for I'd love it.
They're famous for I love it, Kevin Keegan.
They surrendered a 12-point lead.
So they've had great Premier League moments. That doesn't mean they're a big club, surely.
When it comes down to it, you're saying they're a big club. There are big clubs in the Championship. Nottingham Forest are in the Championship.
They're a well-supported club.
Leeds are in the Championship.
I don't dispute that. What I'm saying is, I've never met any Geordie that thinks that they're entitled to win a trophy.
The Geordies, that whenever you, I speak to them, they just want to see good football. They want to see players that try. I never hear them saying we should win the league or we should come in top four. And I think they're really nice people as well. Not
Marvin, go
And the fact, when you see, when I saw those empty seats at half time, and as Ollie said, what's going on in Sunderland? So that you have, you'd rather leave a game. Like, you're not going back. You're thinking, let me go and see Big Ben or the Houses of Parliament. That's
the weekend game, isn't it?
I'm thinking, if you've got a better 45 minutes to spend outside of that stadium, there is a big problem there on that pitch. A very big problem.
The guy in that game I was most interested in, and I forgot to mention him last week, is the Newcastle forward, Mitrovic. He came on and should have got sent off. He should have been. But I'm telling you, let me say now, yeah, he's a player that he can play, but we all need to watch him. He could be the.
Is he a Costa?
He could be a bit of a Costa, but he could also be a bit of a Balotelli. He looks like a loose cannon who will make headlines this season for something or other, because he looks like the sort of player who will let it go to his head, and he's worth watching because he might be brilliant or he might be someone who is just going to get himself in serious trouble.
Now, I think we can all agree that the story of this season were Leicester City almost getting relegated the previous season to becoming champions. And I think it's quite fair to say they won it in the end quite comfortably as well. But Leicester City aside, the John Terry contractual, you know, toing and throwing, the shocking form of Eden Hazard and Branislav Ivanovic, Thibaut Courtois going from one of the top three keepers in the world to, on form, a top eight keeper in the Premier League, the sacking of Jose Mourinho mixed in with the whole drama of the infighting with the doctor and the physio, and that with some really quite poor, embarrassing home defeats and draws. I think it's fair to say that Chelsea were the team that dominated and featured the most heavily on this season's Football Fans podcast. And our regular Chelsea supporter, Gabriel, did his best to defend his boys, but his fellow panellists, I think also it's fair to say, didn't make it easy for him.
Like, it's looking more and more like the last time he was here, and it gets to that season where he's kind of, where they don't want him anymore. And this is exactly the reason why, in the end, Man United didn't go for him, isn't it? Man United didn't want all this trouble, yes. and they've been proved right, because even when he's winning, there's controversy with the guy, and now he's losing, it's even worse. I mean, it's been an embarrassment from the start to now.
Marvin, can Chelsea afford to sack Jose? And I don't mean financially, I mean in terms of, if they do sack him, the message that would send out to any possible replacement would be that we're very trigger happy. We'd have no problem sacking you, good or bad, whatever. If they sack Mourinho, does that maybe put someone like Pep Guardiola potentially off going there in the future? Because if they don't stick by Jose and try and see this bad patch through, that puts off a whole lot of other managers thinking, well, we don't want to go there. That club is, they won the league, like the double last year. Mm-hmm. And they've sacked Jose Mourinho for a bad period or a bad start. Can they afford to sack him, or have they got to ride this out, do you think?
I mean, my recommendation would be to ride it out, right? Because I'm not a big fan of sacking, you know, a manager who's just delivered the Premiership title, right? You've got something that's got to buy you a bit of time. But Chelsea's done it before, haven't they? And they've got previous. I think the difference is, I think Roman saw some lean years post Jose the first time, and I think they both had to come off their high horse to reunite this time. I think that will buy them a bit more time. That being said, the 7-minute rant, to me, Ollie was saying deflection. For me, it was a bit desperation. It was almost like, I'm appealing to you upstairs, I'm appealing to everyone. Like, you know, the chips
like,
are chips are down. Like, cut me some slack. Because the thing is, talking about the penalty, I didn't think it was a penalty. I also think Southampton could have had at least one, maybe two themselves. So the whole thing, I'm not even sure he answered the question. I think, regardless of the question, he was going to, you know, you're right, he was going to do that.
Very, very quickly, Marvin, can I just jump in and say that let's remember, he answered a question. He was only asked one question, and he answered it 7 minutes. He went through the whole gamut of everything he was going to get asked. So the business about getting sacked, He came out with that himself.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It just was a bit desperate. And I've spoken to Chelsea fans who was like, I was a bit embarrassed. Like, because you know me, my immediate thing was, I hope he cries. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if they cry, that is big news. And that was what I was hoping. And it's not a Jose. It was a really defeated Jose, and I was thinking
he was almost begging for, yeah, like, come on guys.
It was like, everyone take responsibility. You know, the people behind the scenes, like, you know, when they start talking about people behind the scenes, they're basically saying, you know, I'm out here taking all the heat, and you're sitting pretty. But I think for Jose's legacy itself, if he walks away now, I think he will have that reputation of, when the cash is flowing, I can make it happen, but when the chips are down, I am not your man. And everybody knows that every team has a bad patch, right? You need somebody that's going to be able to weather the storm.
Yeah. Has anybody ever seen a team with so many good players all simultaneously play so poor at the same time? Ivanovic is the worst player in the league right now. Hazard was a player of the year last year and he's not turned up. Terry's been average at best. You know, Courtois was hot and cold for the few games that he was in. Costa's on a madness. Fabregas is poor.
Yeah.
Matic is getting subbed after 28 minutes. Is he? That's why I was asking. Is he maybe just a little bit unlucky that he's not got one or two players playing poorly? No. He's got all these players at the same. Only William really playing well at the moment. Like,
what is it? A bad workman blames his tools? And that's the thing. If one or two players were off form, it's normal. But when it suits Jose, like we say, when he's taking credit, when Eva Canero and John Firm went on the pitch, he was like, I'm the boss. You know, they shouldn't go on the pitch without my permission. But now we want to talk about everyone else in Stamford Bridge. If you've got that many players off form or whose heads have gone, because it's clearly not just, it's not I've forgotten how to play football. It has to be my head's gone. There's something not right. Then he has to take responsibility because he's the collective thing that holds those players together. It's like when you drive an F1 car, your tyres go off the bridge, as they call it. It feels like Terry and Ivanovic have definitely gone off the bridge. I don't, as much as I've been a fan of Ivanovic for a long time, I don't see how him or Terry can come back from this.
Yeah,
I just wonder with Chelsea, if, and I know I've said this a few times, I just wonder if the Chelsea players were kind of really behind Jose when they were playing the expansive football at the first part of last season that effectively won them the league, because they were so far ahead by the turn of the year that, you know, no one could catch them. But I just wonder if they were with him while they were playing this expansive football. But when he went back to old style Jose playing boring football, I just wonder if he's lost some of those players. Some of those players are just like, I'm not quite up for this. Do you know what I mean?
It's shameful, and it's a disgrace how the whole club has performed this season anyway, and a lot of their players. It's disgusting to even fathom. I feel sorry for Gabriel, but I don't at the same time because of how smug he was last season. But Hazard, for me, takes that. Yeah.
Marv, worst player of the season?
I just want to say, under no circumstances do I feel sorry for Gabriel.
I'm loving it.
Are you going to put the pie in there, Marv?
No. We are talking about teams like Norwich being above you. We are talking about you scoring very few goals and conceding a lot. You've lost more already than you did for the entire season. We are not talking about somebody that is that is underperforming. We are talking at a team in crisis. There is no other word. No.
Would you say if he loses the Norwich?
My personal opinion is he should be the manager next season, regardless of what happens.
Even if you get relegated.
If we got relegated, it is possible. It's relegation form. But, I mean, I believe we will stay up.
And the question is, you said regardless.
Regardless, yeah.
What's the worst case scenario right now?
What would it take for you to sack him?
This season, I'll give him the grace of this season. So
what, if you go down,
even if we go down. Even if we go down.
Incredible.
See, now I'm leaving you with Marvin.
You've lost it.
If you got relegated, you would stick with Jose Mourinho.
Because
under no circumstances you'd sack him, basically.
No, I think he's earned that right. Now,
With that team, you'd accept that.
Forget about Chelsea, right? Yeah. United, Man City, Liverpool, all of the Spurs, Everton, any of those teams get relegated, it doesn't matter what has happened. Those managers are gone. Pellegrini, right? If he gets
I don't disagree with you.
But I'm talking from a personal perspective.
I need to think about what you're saying, right?
Yes, I am saying.
I'm thinking, forget about.
You can explain it as many ways as you want. I'm saying it now. Regardless of what happens, if Jose Mourinho should be Chelsea manager at the beginning of next season. And you know what? We won't be relegated. We might not get top four, but we definitely won't be relegated.
I'm talking about, forget about match of the day. You're on Channel 5 now. You're watching it at 9 p.m. with some people that don't deserve it. We're talking about away games at the KC Stadium on a Friday night, right? This is what we're talking about. I know you love the guy. And to be honest with you, I'm impressed about your patriotism to this. But I need you to think about what you're saying. You are saying if Chelsea, the team who have the gold badge and we won it last year and all that malarkey, if they get relegated from the Premiership, that you are sticking with Jose.
Yes.
Do you think the players are going to stick with Jose?
Before you answer, yeah. I'm sensing that Marvin's a really good friend. Yeah. This has been recorded. He's giving you a chance to reverse that statement.
I'm not as big a friend as I used to be because I like my friends to be safe.
You have to be real.
I'm being honest. That's what I love. And it's not because, it's not just because of nostalgia. A part of it is nostalgia. I won't lie. A part of it is nostalgia. But at the same time, what better manager could we get for the championship?
I've got to wrap it up there.
Because now it's like, no, I don't want to take no risks. I don't want you going forward. I don't want you doing this. I don't want you doing that. I mean, Fabregas looks a really bad player.
I'm a huge fan of Fabregas. He looks like a really bad player, doesn't he, at the moment?
Yeah, all of those players, suddenly I've gone from looking at Chelsea as a team like, God, they could hurt you there, they can hurt you there, to thinking, who have they actually got in this team? I was suddenly looking and thinking, they look really slow. And like, Hazard doesn't look like a player anymore. Willian, I'm thinking, is he that good? I said to you a few weeks ago, I'm not totally convinced about Pedro. All this talk about Pedro or £20 million, he's got him on a cheap. He's not the sort of player who, when you're in a rut like this, he's gonna step up and he's gonna drag you out of a hole. He's a good player in a great team, but when it comes to being a top player in a team that's struggling, he ain't your man. So I'm looking at it and thinking, well, hold on a minute, all them three players behind Costa, and Costa's struggling as well. You got the man, you got Willian, as I said, and then you got Oscar, who we saw in the World Cup. He's here and there, isn't he? You look at it and you think, suddenly I'm looking at that team and thinking, who have they got? And actually, when you strip away the system that they had or the way they were playing, suddenly it's like they look pretty ordinary.
I think the fixtures were so pivotal because Swansea like a good start. I mean, they packed us out when we started. And I just think that first game, everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. You know what I mean? And then the whole doctor thing happened towards the end. That became the news cycle as well as the dropping of points. And then the next game was City and they just got packed out against City. It was just a snowball effect.
It's really interesting listening back to all of the pods, all 38 podcasts we've done this season, and just listening back to some of the predictions, because I'm very big on making my guests, make predictions. All my guests are very intelligent and articulate football fans, and they all have their thoughts and views on the things that I ask them questions about, and I ask them to make predictions, especially in the first part of the season. I'm very big on getting people to predict what they think might happen. Obviously, people can be wrong, but listening back to many of these shows is really, really funny and interesting, hearing how correct certain people were, but also how far off with their predictions, and I include myself in that many other people were. So I want to clip up some of the best and worst predictions that we've heard on the Football Fans Podcast this season.
Because the funny thing about it is, when I look at Bournemouth, right, I get what they're doing. Do you know what I mean? Because they actually played some decent ball in the championship.
I'm making my first bold shout. I think not only will Bournemouth stay up, I think they'll stay up and not finish fourth from bottom. I think they might. That team unity, that ground.
I think they're going to stay up.
No
chance. I love can't Eddie Howe.
I'm like Burnley. Burnley got a lot of draws last year. Yeah. I think Bournemouth will take a lot more defeats than Burnley, but they'll win more than Burnley as well.
And they'll score more.
And they'll score more than Burnley.
So who are your three to go down?
So my three are Norwich, Sunderland, and I think Watford may just go.
Okay,
I think Watford may just go. Natasha, first sacking. He's getting the bullet first.
Brendan Rodgers is bang in trouble.
Oh, wow. That's a shout.
Wow, man. I'd love it. That is my shout. Do you know what? The season they, you know, slipped up and should have won the league, that got him a bit of extra time, you know, obviously. Yeah, we nearly won the league, da, da, da. He's a good manager, but you've got no Stevie G to save you now.
Ranieri.
Okay.
I just think that he's, as I said earlier, I think he's the wrong fit for Leicester. I think that whole business with how they sacked, I can't remember his name now.
Nigel Pearson. Just call him the angry PE teacher.
Yeah, the angry PE. I mean, whatever went on in Thailand, and obviously his position was seriously compromised by his son's behaviour in Thailand, but that shouldn't have impacted on Pearson himself. And I think he deserved another season because that was incredible what he did last season.
He's a bully. And they tried to sack him before, and he scared the hell out of them.
Bullying works. Bullying works. If it worked for him, then fine. But I don't think he was a bully. I just think he needs some media training.
Ollie?
I've got my eye on Leicester now. I think they're going to go. I think that Ranieri is a bad choice. His last few jobs he's had, he's been sacked from. And I'm not convinced that's a good fit at all. Mm. So I'm going to go with Leicester to go down. And Bournemouth, I agree, Bournemouth will go. I just think that Eddie Howe, he's, you know, everyone's kind of quite keen on him because he's a forward-thinking manager or whatever. That ain't going to cut any mustard in the Prem.
Yeah, because he tried it with Burnley, didn't he?
We've seen a lot of times with these football playing guys who come up from the Championship and they just get battered every week, you know. And they, you know, when they played against Liverpool in the League Cup, Liverpool battered them, didn't they? I think it was 4-0, wasn't it, or something, or 5-0. And Liverpool were going for a really bad stretch, and they went there and beat them 5-0 or something like that. It was embarrassing. So yeah, I kind of expect Bournemouth to go, and I think it will be Norwich who will be the other team. I think that there's something about Watford because they got interesting owners who they've got their fingers in loads of pies all around Europe. They've got loads of players that they can bring in, and they've been active through the summer. Mm. They've brought in something like 10 players.
I think 11 players.
And they've got, you know, Kike Sanchez Flores as a new manager who's no mug.
I think
Watford will be all right, actually. I think Watford will do okay. They've got some decent players. They've got a decent pool of players around Europe that they can call on. Mm. And so I think they'll be okay.
My personal opinion on Harry Kane is I don't think he's a great striker. I said it last season. Mac is in the room. We have a bet, £10. I don't think Harry Kane will get 10 league goals this season.
Well, we saw that this year was clearly the year of the underdog, with Leicester obviously winning the Premier League. The likes of Watford getting to an FA Cup semi-final, Palace getting to an FA Cup final, and even the likes of Southampton just missing out on a top four spot. Bournemouth quite comfortably staying up in the Premier League. Watford having a solid Premier League season and never really looking like going down. West Ham kind of coming out of nowhere to mix it with the big boys, you know, in the race for a top four spot. That obviously all meant that the traditional big boys, your Arsenals, United, your Cities, your Liverpools, were put on the back foot to some degree. So we have spent a lot of time on the pod this season talking about Arsenal, United, City and Liverpool, because they've obviously all, despite Arsenal's finishing second, underachieved this season. So we kicked off a feature, or Marvin started a feature kind of organically, about Petr Cech. That was a signing that was quite lauded by many people at the start of the season. Many predicted it could be the signing that gets Arsenal over the line, a real man, a real leader and a real winner. We have blasted City for most of the season of, you know, best squad in the league, and, you know, scraping a top four spot on the last week or so was quite shabby. United, you're going to hear in a minute what we have to say about them. They feature quite heavily on the pod as well. And Liverpool with Jurgen Klopp went from a team that was kind of just misling around to ended up getting to two cup finals, even though they lost both. But the future there looks quite bright as well. So here's some of the best clips I've dug out from us discussing some of the big boys who have quite clearly this season underachieved.
Do I still get annoyed when I see that Scully cap? Surely you're okay now. Do you know what I mean? It's all a bit mental. If you're that strong a guy, you think Schmeichel could still be what? Wearing that Scully cap.
Do you know what? If he busts his head again and never plays again, we'll all be wishing he had worn the Scully cap. Yeah.
And an after fan, if it works, you wear whatever you want on your head. Sorry, I don't business what you wear.
Fair enough. I'm just telling you how I feel. Like, how long does healing take? Do you need some more calcium? What do you need? Do you know what I mean?
Arsenal's problem, yeah, they probably can be, they will be able to do that, but the problem then comes that when they play the lesser teams or the supposed lesser teams, they might be, get a bit too overconfident, like they did against Monaco. Everyone's tipping them after the Community Shield. Arsenal could win the title. Then they go into the game against West Ham, and West Ham have a system in place and are organised, and Arsenal don't have the answers. And we've seen that so many times. That is what happens with Arsenal every time when they're put under the microscope. They basically fluff their lines, don't they?
They haven't started well, have they? They haven't been very convincing. Apart from the game, funny enough, the game they played at Arsenal, where they played really well, but they didn't win. But other than that, they haven't been convincing this season. But having said that, I still think that he deserved the season to get, you know, to see whether he could get this team playing. And if he didn't do it at the end of this season, they could sack him. But I'm not really sure what Liverpool fans are looking for, what they want. Obviously, they want the heady days of the 80s back. That ain't happening. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not happening anytime soon anyway. But I can't really see where the connect is. Obviously, you start looking at the whole business with Klopp and think, well, obviously, Rodgers was finished at Liverpool. This was going to happen, whatever he did. So,
To be honest with you, I think Van Gaal's getting away with murder at the moment. If he's any other manager, people will be asking serious questions about what is going on at Man United and what are they doing with the money that they've got. The money that they're spending on players is just obscene, as far as I can see. And not only is it obscene, but they're just wasting money. And it's just a joke. I understand that Man United, unlike Chelsea, unlike Manchester City, are a club who generate their own income and they can spend it any way they want. But it's just ridiculous. We're watching Di Maria walk away from Man United after being signed for £60 million. He's disappearing after a year, and Man United are getting £44 million back. That's obscene. That's ridiculous.
If you were United's hierarchy, you would be saying, we're going to keep it and make it work.
I would turn around to him and say, listen, give me another year. If it doesn't work, we'll look at it again. But you need to give us another season here, because we've spent a lot of money on you. I don't really care whether you had your heart set on a move to PSG. You signed a contract for Manchester United. This isn't some small club. You're talking about one of the biggest clubs in Europe. You owe us another season. Give it another go, see how it goes. If you don't like it, or we might even look at it in January, but we expect you to get your head down and get on with it.
I don't know whether you can stick 38 games in the Prem, 20 games in the Europa League, a bit of a cup run, and still be doing that in the final 6 weeks, 7 weeks of a season. That's where I think it might run into, because you can't let up in the Prem. You can have Bournemouth, who, you know, struggling at the moment, Newcastle struggling. If you turn up and aren't completely at it, they'll take you apart. They'll do a number on you.
Yeah. De Bruyne is nearly 60 million.
I mean, De Bruyne...
60 million, you've got to do so much.
He's brilliant, to be honest. He's brilliant.
Ollie said it. Like, it's only those... Like, I mean, would you say De Bruyne's value? You say it's value for money.
60 million, I want him to get.
Absolutely.
He's not 60, he's 54.
Absolutely okay. Not value, but
it sounds better.
But Wolfsburg know that the Prem has the money, especially City, so you're going to do it. Like, if I'm Wolfsburg, of course I'm going to say, give me 54.
If I'm Wolfsburg and you're coming for my best player, you got to pay top dollar for my best player. Because I know his.
When you saw the Arsenal lineup, it didn't matter who was in that lineup. If I saw Szczęsny at Engo, I was like, you know what? There's three points there for the taking.
There's a mistake waiting to happen.
You know what? I don't care if it's a cross or whether he just slices it into his own net.
I'm getting something today.
I'm getting something, right? And there's no mistaking that last year De Gea was the player of the year for us, right? He kept us in a lot of games. And I do worry, and we were talking about it off air, whether his head's going to be fully committed this year. And I think the rest of the players are going to have to step up and get him enthused about still being at United. But in answer to your question, I just can't help but feel that Cech is a monumental signing for Arsenal. He's not old. He's not over the hill.
If you're saying that you expect your yeah. team to come top four,
that's what I want.
Anything below that, I'm assuming is a fail.
Like fifth, you could probably get away with it just about. But the only way you could get away with that is if there
Spurs
was some...
Spurs have got that position trademark. That's our position.
It's 4-4-6, mate.
It's 4-4-6. We come fifth, Lozzy. It's not you. That's our position. That's our station in life. You can't take that.
You've got to get your own spot, mate. That's what you're saying, basically.
Well, ours is traditionally fourth, so I want to go back to there. But
so for Rodgers, I mean, he's got to deliver this year after a poor year last year. What keeps his job?
Getting the Champions League.
Anything other than that,
I think he could. No, I'm not saying I would want him out, but I think he's definitely going to get enough pressure to lose his job if we don't get Champions League.
But I want to know from you, as a Liverpool fan, what is the worst case scenario for him to go?
Anything less than fifth.
So sixth, then he's got to go.
Yeah, get out.
Okay.
All the money he spent, and nah, just
fine. They're not going to, the players they're linked with, Lewandowski, Muller, Bale, Ronaldo, all these Neymar, they're not going to get these players.
Sorry. Could you do those names again?
I'll do them again. Lewandowski, no. Muller,
no.
Bale,
no.
Ronaldo,
no.
Neymar,
no.
Cavani, Ibrahimovic,
Pedro.
When they announced the whole Pep Guardiola thing, I think you had a podcast and everyone was like, oh, you know, this, the world's over, the sky's falling, you know, the sky's falling down, the world's over, everything's finished, you know, City are going to dominate English football for the next 3 years, everyone go home, pack your bags. If they don't get in the top four, which is a realistic thing to be talking about now, because the way West Ham are playing and the way City have been playing for the past few months, you have to stick your money on West Ham.
I tell you, I was biting my tongue because Ollie was killing me. I just had to bite my tongue because there was so much disagreement. I didn't know where to start. Like the first thing, what he's talking about, Ronaldo going to Madrid. Ronaldo went to Madrid a year later than he should have because we held on to him and he had a fantastic season that year. That's the first thing, right?
The other point is,
Jordan said
Ronaldo,
that De Gea...
With Ronaldo, you got a world record fee for him. But Jordan you're not going to get anything for De Gea if you let him go
Jordan
next
said
year.
De Gea got us about 10 to 12, right? So if we don't get those 10 to 12, Ollie, we're sitting here. I'm not in Champions League. I can't sign Depay. I can't sign Schneiderlin.
Yes,
because
you can.
I can't sign him because I haven't got Champions League
yes,
football.
You can.
Right?
You're Man United.
And now it's a rude awakening. I think you can't take anything away from West Ham, right? Mm. From top to bottom, you know, I know Payet was good. Obviously, the youngster, Reece Oxford, 16, hasn't even got his GCSE results yet. Putting people like Ozil in his pocket.
He's still there, apparently.
The memes were
again. This Arsene Wenger myth. All the things that he revolutionised, changing their diets and bringing in different
things. Of football,
and bringing
in
the brand of football.
Football
was,
did you see us play before Wenger?
Football was going that way in any case.
We'll never know that, will we?
We do know that.
We'll never know that.
It was going
that
way.
He
brought off in the Prem. He has failed. And I'll tell you what, because he got stuck in a time. Remember, he had the benefit of having the inside knowledge of France already because he's French and his networks were French and all that kind of stuff. So he knew about Vieira, Petit, and those were the only two that he signed, I think, and Overmars in his first season or so. Oh, well, yeah. But important players that, you know, were serious. Okay. But then the rest of the team was George Graham's. Yeah. So, and then Bruce Rioch is the one that signed Dennis Bergkamp. So you could say their best team, for me, which is the 98 team, their best team was, it's that whole thing with Roberto Martinez. His first season at Everton, he benefited from the organisation that David Moyes had and added a bit of sprinkle, stardust and all that kind of stuff. But guy,
the thing is, this is a bit controversial, right? But this is how I compared it last time. And not that I've got anything, I just want to point this out. I haven't got anything against big issue sellers, right? I want to start with that, right?
Just put that out there right now, yeah.
But
I'm scared.
I do an office job, right? I do a simple office job. Now, if one day I got to work and there was a big issue guy sitting at my desk doing my job better than me, it would hurt my self-esteem. And Ashley Young is that big issue player for me. Right? So for me, you got all of that family stuff you got to deal with, Ollie. And then you're sitting on the bench and watching Ashley Young play in front of you.
Like, they're one of the strongest... exactly. They were still one of the strongest squads in the league, yeah. Like man for man, and they did strengthen. Which mm. Whereas you look at a team like, say, that's comparable like Chelsea, which is like a very strong squad man for man, they didn't really strengthen mm. as well as I think Man City did. So I didn't understand why everyone was just writing them off and then like looking to Arsenal like, yeah, they're going to do it just because they bought
I can see why they did, because Man City have won two titles in recent seasons, right? But both of those title wins, they've done it by the skin of their teeth. They've done it because other teams have messed up. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying Man City are a poor side. They've got great players. But Man City, by now, should have won a title where they just win it and everyone's like, they've just creamed that league. They've absolutely slaughtered everyone. They haven't done that. The first time they did it, Aguero's goal in injury time, yeah? The other season they did it was because Liverpool messed up. They need other teams to make mistakes a lot of the time for them to actually prosper. And I don't think that City, with the defence that they've got and with the players that they've got who are a bit in and out, a bit kind of, yeah, you know, I feel like it this week, and then the next week they turn out a ridiculous result. I'm not convinced about Man City.
What I have to say is that kind of performance... that's typical Arsenal. Listen, these are top players.
You're professional.
These are players, you know. Ozil's a World Cup winner, yeah? Sanchez has just come back from winning the Copa America. It's not acceptable. It's not acceptable that you go out and you've already lost the first game in Zagreb. You can come out against Olympiacos. They've never won a game in England. They come to Arsenal and they win. And not only do they win, right? You get back, you after being 2-0 down, you get back on level terms. And then not more than a minute after you equalise, you let them go and score. Not acceptable.
I'm not disagreeing with that side of things.
The one, as an Arsenal fan, the one negative I thought from Sunday's game was that we weren't ruthless. If that was any other top team, that'd have been 6-0. We should have won that game 6-0.
No,
any other top team wins that game 6-0.
But that's the point. 5-0. Because I know... And I think Wenger was right to do it.
If we were ruthless, it was going to be 3-1. That was my thing. It was like, we're 2-0 up. If we start going on cocky and bad, we're going to concede a goal. So I'm actually glad we didn't do that. And I'm glad we kept the 100% win.
100% agree. Because George, you know what?
I'd let in a goal if he can score three more. 6-1 is better than 3-0.
George, you know what? Arsenal is the only... I watched that game, right? And even at 70 minutes, I still thought we had a shot. And Arsenal, I think, are the only Premiership club where at 3-0 down, based on the way United are playing, I still thought we had a shot. So I thought Wenger did a splendid job to say, look, let's not get fancy here.
The second half was arguably better than the first half in the way that...
Yeah, we blitzed them. Now let's just show them...
Control the game.
Yeah, you can have the ball, but you're not going
to
break us.
It's only 8 years since Sheikh Mansour's been at the club.
Enough to kind of get you out of the back.
Hang on. There's 8 years is not even a generation of football fans. You've got the same generation of football fans who were going to Macclesfield in the third tier of English football. And now all of a sudden, they've got Sergio Aguero scoring their goals for them. So that's a huge quantum leap in 8 years by anyone's standard. So I think you have to bear in mind, and the mentality of Manchester City, for a lot of Manchester City fans, is something will go wrong at some point.
Now, to all of the regular listeners of the Football Fans podcast, you'll know that we don't just focus on the teams at the top half of the table and the teams are going for the Premier League and trying to get into those Champions League positions. And equally, we don't just focus on the teams in the bottom 5, 6 or 7 of the Premier League and the teams that are fighting for survival. We also focus on all 20 teams in the Premier League, really, including all the teams in the kind of middly area of the table. So your kind of Bournemouths, your Watfords, your Swanseas, your Palaces, your West Hams, your Southamptons, the teams that kind of go under the radar a little bit simply because they're not maybe going for a Premier League title or fighting for their life in the Premier League. So I've picked out, again, some of the best comments and clips from what's been said on the Football Fans podcast this season about some of those teams in that kind of middle zone of the Premier League.
Michy Pye would not even have been going to a team like West Ham, with all due respect to him, at the age he is now, with the ability that he's got. I still don't think West Ham fans realise what a big deal his signing was, leaving Marseille and coming over to play in the Premier League.
I also think what's been interesting is also about the kind of culture of a club and when personalities kind of lead to disruption. So I remember when the chap from Chelsea went to Palace
Is it Bamford? Bamford went there, and he left under a grey cloud about the way he felt that he was treated. He kind of went back and he kind of apologised. But that seemed to maybe betray maybe some other politics that was happening at the club. And then you bring in players like Adebayor, maybe that collectivism that was there has disrupted their pattern. But I do feel that their first 11 was very competitive with lots of good players in it, especially good Premier League players. But the forward was a problem, and now you're seeing that kind of foundation lead to their decline.
You look at Crystal Palace, probably the best counter-attacking team in the Premiership, probably playing the best football. Swansea, another one.
I like Swansea more than I like Palace.
I'm probably Swansea,
another good footballing side. Naturally, they got fast wingers. As you said, they get out wide, pull it into the striker. Gomez, an old-school striker, knock it in.
I mean, I think Big Sam said it best, where their performances and, you know, outcome of the season is dependent on Dimitri Payet, right? When he was out of the team, they struggled. And I know people have talked, I've been impressed with people like Victor Moses and, you know, Sakho in bursts, but Payet's been that constant.
Too late for them, do you think?
I'd still want to see a bit more from them, to be honest. A bit like what Gabe was saying a bit earlier about Chelsea. I think that you kind of, Southampton have been so inconsistent all season that it's hard to see them. I know they've won the last three, but then you know,
sheets as well in all three of those games.
Yeah, but they started the month losing against Norwich, and not that's you know you
shouldn't lose to
you
Norwich.
Shouldn't lose to Norwich. Come on, and they went out of the cup to Crystal Palace at home. Another bad result. A team like Southampton should be looking at having a decent cup run.
Now you've had some big clubs in the Premier League this year seriously underperform. And then you've had Tottenham, who were the closest challengers to the eventual champions, Leicester. But even throughout Tottenham's really, really good season, you got the sense from some of the fans that featured on the FFP, Ranty, Fabio, and our regular Ollie, that never really quite believed they were going to actually do it. And subsequently, we've seen that they didn't.
It's gone. I think every fan knows it's gone. Well, me being a realistic Spurs fan, I've been very, very impressed with the manner in which we've gone about our games this season. And I was speaking to you about this earlier, Jordan. I think Pochettino has instilled a very strong mentality into this Spurs side. From the back right the way to the front, we have players who are fearless, players who are willing to respond during a bad spell. I think we've lost four games this Premier League season, and I think each game that we have lost this season, we have responded well. I mean, I watched the Leicester versus Sunderland game, and there was hope. There was a false sense of hope on my part, but I did think Sunderland could force out a draw, or maybe go on and beat Leicester, which they didn't, obviously. And when I saw 10 points between Leicester and Spurs, I thought to myself, you know what, we're not going to win this game. We're not going to win. The most we're going to get from this United game is probably a draw.
Fifth and sixth are their level. That's more or less what they achieve.
That's near a top four club.
No, but I think there's a big gap between
fourth and fifth.
Yeah. Fair enough. And I actually think Liverpool are closer to fourth than Tottenham. Have I had a pod without a Spurs fan?
Yeah, we have actually.
You're talking about, give him the voice. Too much voice, man.
It's his first voice. Ran,
sorry. No, it's fine. It's not an attack on you.
It's
fine.
It's an attack on all of you.
I can't hear you from up here anyway.
Shots.
Love it.
I think he has to take some of the blame. Just going back quickly to what you were saying there, that's exactly what I was saying. Tottenham's real problem is they've got no midfield, and he's set his stall out, and it's that typical manager thing. All these managers, right? This is why you see a lot of managers come into clubs, and you think, "Whoa, why is he taking that job?" You know what I mean? Mm. That's a nightmare job. Mm. But they all go in there thinking, having that arrogance of I can make the difference. I can turn it around. Yeah. And he's got that arrogance of, I can make Dier into a defensive midfielder. When actually I'm looking at it and thinking, mate, you are asking to be sacked because you couldn't even get in the team as a defender. Well, there you go.
I've had some fun listening through to, well, every single show now of the FFP this season to try and compile this best of the FFP pods.
And there's been some really interesting points that have been made that have kind of come from nowhere. From many of the panelists, there's been some crazy things said. There's been some stupid things said, some quite funny exchanges from many of the panelists that have featured on the FFP this season. Obviously, I can't include every single one. I've had to leave out some really, really good ones. But I've just picked out two or three random ones now, for no reason other than the fact of, you know, some really good points made and some good exchanges between some of the panellists that have been on the FFP this season.
When a player shows skill in the Premier League, they have a word for it. They call it showboating. I think, why did that word even exist in our vocabulary? I mean, it's a negative connotation to a piece of expression which football is supposed to be about. Expression, skill. And this is a thinking man's game that relies on all these particular nuances that we never embrace. Our game is so visceral, it's so based on power, it's so based on pace, that actually the nuances that enable you to really actually compete at higher levels, we don't do. And so I think that actually the way that we take penalties is a part of that entire culture, which is why the English side is so poor.
I tell you, and you've gone around the houses here, Simeon, but you're talking nonsense.
I remember
Euro 96, right? When England played Germany, yeah, in that semi-final, when Germany took those penalties. Go back and watch it on YouTube sometime. Watch the penalties that Germany took. Every one of their penalties, right, was in the roof of the net. It didn't matter where Seaman dived. It didn't matter if you went right or left or whatever. Every penalty they hit, they put their foot through it and they put it in the roof of the net. What that shows to me, Simeon, is players who have supreme belief in their ability and they're not psyched out by the occasion.
The issue
that England players had is that when it came down to it in that penalty shootout, they bricked it. They were like, oh, God, I don't want to take penalties. The Germans... when it comes down to taking a penalty, right, they never shirk the responsibility.
No,
the thing is, not only do they not shirk the responsibility, but in moments of big, big pressure, right, they're prepared to put their foot through the ball and put it in the roof of the net. And that's got nothing. That has got nothing to do with what you were just saying. Because they're German.
Our game. Our game is so visceral.
I just told you the Germans play. They hit penalties
Germans, especially counting the Germans today, are far more pragmatic. Everything's about technique and everything is about being precise. So the thing to take away from those penalties is that they're precise and that they can make decisions and that they can be cold. That's what to take away from it. Not that the fact that they blasted it, because actually they'll take a whole range of penalties and it could be a tapping or not. It could be a side foot.
My
point is that over history, Germans have taken a whole range of different types of penalties. They've used power or they've used side foot. The thing that is consistent is the fact that it's precise and it's cold. My point is that we, in British players, even when they're missing penalties, they're blasting it. And that's one thing you always notice, which is probably why Jordan asked the question. And I feel that betrays the fact that actually there's a lack of thought, there's a lack of guile, there's a lack of nuance to actually other countries, because they see football as a way of using forms of expression and being a bit more
Have you got examples to this? When I look at the penalties that were taken in the League Cup final the other day,
yeah,
the ones that were missed were by people like Coutinho. He's not English and he was trying to be clever. So I don't know what you're talking about. The penalty takers that missed, most of them were trying to be clever.
That's like my point. They're trying to think differently. I'm not saying that a player who's not British has never missed a penalty before. That's a ridiculous statement. What I'm saying, though, is that the fact that British players are more likely to blast it, and not even necessarily score, but just blast it, shows that our game is so much based on pace and based on power and based on instinct. And actually, outside of this country, I think that the way that young players are taught to play football is based on expression,
I agree with that to a point, Simeon, but you are massively generalising it.
Well, who is Akin doesn't agree with me. Well, let's call him. Can I call him a C-list manager? B C-list manager, Akin.
Call him what you want.
Because I said he was the lead manager there, and Akin wasn't happy with that. So he's a top class manager. He's a manager above
He's not a top class manager.
See, there you go. You just said Conor White won.
I love the fact G asked for permission though. He's seriously broken, isn't it? See, a year ago, he never asked. He'd have just said, this is what I think. But now he's like, Akin, can I have a seat?
I do whatever.
Ollie's kind of hit the nail on the head. It's all about perception in this country, is that, you know, when stories start running and public don't do their own research, they just kind of listen to the the chatter, then that kind of gets stuck, and they that reputation is there effectively forever. And in the second side of it, thinking about what he has been through, for any human to be on your job and then to be in that attack and see colleagues die, yes, me personally as a human, I'm thinking that's a lot, right? So I know the guy is talented. We've seen him be a really top player at certain points, but then there are times when he's just falling completely off. That sort of drop off for me has a reason behind it. I wouldn't make any excuses for Adebayor because the guy's rich, okay? So I don't feel sorry for him. Yes, he hasn't helped himself in how he's conducted himself. He's not very professional. My only problem with this whole Adebayor situation is that it's only been reported from one angle. So it doesn't give the public a chance to kind of have that. But you know what I mean? If it was anybody else, to answer your question, I feel like it would be, yes, he's unprofessional, but he did go through X, Y, and Z.
I thought best to leave the champions till last. A big congratulations to Leicester City. Crazy, crazy season it has been, with Leicester City winning the Barclays Premier League. Big up to all the fans, all the players and the management over there. Great job, worthy winners, and they will now be the team to beat next season. So I thought I'd leave some of the best quotes and comments that we've made on the Football Fans podcast this season on Leicester City to last. So Leicester City, here's to you.
Clinging on to their Premier League status for dear life, to now being a team who are a decent Premier League outfit.
You're not having
and
it.
I'm not saying, you know, and I just think that, you know,
we don't like Leicester.
I think it's a little bit premature to be claiming that they're a solid Premier League team.
That's all I would say.
But you know what? They have something that Spurs don't, and that's a bit of heart, right? Jude, to be honest with you, I've got really strong feelings about this one, right? Because nobody is denying the miraculous Leicester story, right? They're talking about movies, they're talking about books. Claudio's been given random pieces of art from the Italian government. Like, this is a big deal. But I honestly think that people need to get real and deal with this in the way it deserves to be treated. A miracle, right? Never been done. I would be very surprised if Leicester win the league next year, right? So I don't want people... I've spoken to fans at, you know, clubs that have battled relegation and just kept, you know, safe. And they're saying, you know what? Next year, Leicester's the template, right? We can see that it can be done with the right player recruitment, with the right manager. It can happen. And I'm just thinking, ain't that the story every year? You've got to recruit the best players and you've got to recruit the right manager.
A team like Leicester, all of their players, right, they know their limitations. They don't think that they're the best players in the world. They know that to win games of football,
they have to work hard.
Leicester winning the league and having a season they have had is one of the worst things to happen to certain clubs and to certain managers. And I'm not talking about Tony Pulis and Steve Bruce, you mentioned, and Sam Allardyce. It's one of the worst things to happen to people like Arsene Wenger as well. Because the questions, I know for a fact these questions are being asked in boardrooms, not just in the bottom half of the table, but in the top half. They're saying, if Leicester can do it, why can't you?
So you've just heard some of the best and worst and funniest and idiotic and interesting and downright stupid and incisive and thought-provoking and controversial opinions and points and predictions from some of the guys that are featured on the Football Fans podcast this year. I really hope you've all enjoyed listening to the podcast in our debut season. I'll ask one thing of all the listeners: if you have enjoyed listening to the Football Fans podcast, if you could tweet, if you could Facebook post and include us in those tweets and posts,
We will retweet, share to all of your football-loving friends and family. That would be great. We want to try and get this a lot more interactive next season as well with a lot of our listeners. So we'll be getting a lot more feedback, a lot more questions, and just points of view from people that may think that what they're hearing on the pod from the guys is absolutely nonsense and rubbish. Or you may agree with some of the guys that talk on the FFP. But either way, we want to try and make it a lot more, we want to involve a lot more of the listeners in next season's FFP. Big thank you to all the guys that have come on the pod this season. Big thank you to their, you know, you've given their efforts and their time and their viewpoints on the FFP. It's been really, really, really fun. We'll be back next season, but before next season, we will be doing some football fans podcasts throughout the European Championships. But between now and then, I'd like to thank you all. Say peace.